is Marty, an alcoholic.
Hi, Marty.
I'm going to read how it works. You know, I was listening to the part about people being constitutionally incapable of being honest. I don't know if I was constitutionally incapable or constitutionally capable of being honest, but I came into AA. But when I arrived here, I was never in the truth. I was always lying. I was either lying directly, or I would lie by omission a lot. I would just, like, what I didn't tell you, what people seemed to think, I just would allow it, you know, if that's what I wanted, you know. And they told me they had to do was I had to stop being dishonest. I had to start being honest, you know. And the first thing I had to be honest with was the alcohol and what it did to me. And I was a person that I never had control. I was a blackout drinker from like when I was 12 years old. You know, in the course of my drinking, I got to the point in my early mid-20s where I could drink a lot. I mean, I could drink a hell of a lot, but I was still, you know, end up in a blackout. I'd always get drunk. If I didn't get drunk, it was just because I didn't have money, and I couldn't get it, and I couldn't steal it, and I couldn't borrow it. And I'd get it the next day, and I'd get drunk that day, you know. So when I came into AA, for the previous 10 years, I had been basically drunk just about every day for the previous 10 years. I worked all except for like 6 months in those 10 years. And basically what I did was I went to work. I came home. I didn't exactly go home. I went to a tavern, which was more like home than any place else. And I would just drink. And there was one bar, I guess maybe the last 6 years I was drinking. I drank in there almost every day. And you know, in the last few months, I was the guy nobody was talking to anymore. I was the guy that, like, you know, if it gets as bad as Marty, then we'll stop. You know, I remember I was, this guy was talking to me. It was two guys went to this bar who still talked to me the last month I was drinking. This one guy, him and I were having a conversation around a third man, and the third guy said, this guy's on the other side of me, and he said, pass me to the other guy, why are you talking to Marty? Marty's, he's fucked up. He's an asshole. And I wasn't even offended. I knew exactly what he meant. I was like, why are you wasting your time talking to me? You know, I reached a point where I have like nothing to contribute to anybody. I was just a sponge. I got a Christmas Eve 1977. It was the last day I was drinking, and I got into a little bit of a car accident. You know, around close to midnight. I just wanted to get away before the cops came, because I didn't want to get arrested. I mean, I didn't care to hit this guy's car. I just I didn't want to get arrested. Not more than anything else, because like, I know if I get arrested, I get convicted, I'd have to pay a $1,500 fine. And where the hell am I going to get $1,500, right? And if I get spend $1,500 on that in a lawyer, like, this is going to really cut into my drinking for a while, you know? And this is like, I got to get away, because all I wanted to do was drink. I just like I looked forward to drinking every day. I would, you know, I'd go, and I was working and get on a bus and where I lived wasn't great public transportation. I took about a bus halfway home. I had to walk maybe 3 or 4 miles, and I can remember, you know, like the last half mile when I was close to the tavern, I started to feel better. I started to feel myself rising up a little bit, you know, and I'd walk in and have a drink and have another drink. You know, I wouldn't go home, or I'd go home and I'd come back, and, you know, the next morning I get up and I go to the bathroom and, you know, give some blood, you know, and I just, like, that was my life. I think in the last 6 months I was drinking, like, my one social activity was, like, this friend of mine, Frankie, we bet these two guys that we could beat them playing basketball, okay? So it was like a $50 a bet. This is 1976. $50 was a fair amount of money then. So we bet we were playing up in basketball. So what they did was, the guys who were playing said, all right, we'll play you like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock on Saturday, okay? So that meant Frankie and I were sitting in the bar at 8 o'clock in the morning drinking together, you know, with our strategy, how we're going to beat these guys. So one, we played them, and we lost 21-1, you know. It's like, and it wasn't that we were such bad players. It was like very drunk, you know. And the other guys, they were sober, you know. So they hit the box, like, shit, you know. That was it. You know, I remember the last summer I was drinking, I was sitting in the bar, and I was thinking, like, I have nothing to say to anybody that I did anything this summer. So I said, okay, I'll go to the beach. So I went next door to a liquor store. I bought a bottle of rum, because I thought people drank rum at beaches. You know, it's like a Caribbean idea I had. And I drove my car to We didn't have public transportation. We had great beaches along Long Island. Like Robert Moses State Park. It's a beautiful beach. And it's about 100 degrees. And I'm walking around with blue jeans on, a long sleeve sweatshirt, a beard down to my chest, and I'm drinking a quarter rum as I'm walking along the beach, looking at all the sunbathers, and they're looking at me. And that was my summer vacation. You know, that was my day at the beach. You know, it was pretty sad. I was 29 years old. I was single. I had a car. You know, something better to hold on for the summer. So if you saw me actually in November, I would have said, you would say, what did you do? I said, I went to the beach. Good time. It was nice. Sun, you know, got sunburned on my face and my hands. So first thing was covered. And So I had this little accident, and the guy was young, and he was pissed off because I hit his car, and I was drunk, and it was Christmas Eve. And he didn't know what. I guess some people don't like to get hit by drunks on Christmas Eve. You know, touch you bastard. So I was just trying to get out of it. I was being reasonable. I said, I'll give you some money. I had some money for some reason. I'll give you some money. We'll have to go insurance. I'll take care of everything. I'm looking. One of the cops coming. I got to get out of here. You know? I'm trying to be really, I'll be as nice as I can be. I'm seeing triple, but I'm trying. You know, I'm trying to be reasonable with this man, but he's like really yelling at me, and he's mad at me, and he's blaming me. And I don't like being blamed. Okay? I don't like blame. I don't mind blaming myself, but I don't want to hear it from you. So, and he also had he was an older man. He was about, I guess about 65, 70. He was very scrawny, and had one of those electronic voice boxes. So as he's screaming at me, I'm getting feedback. He's like, oh, no, 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 you know, so, and I swear to God, I'm being so nice to this poor man, you know. He's like, he's being like, pain in my ass. So, I figured, like, I had to shut him up. So I was just about to start to strangle him. You know, I was going to choke him. He's like, you just shut up and you're okay, you know. And his daughter showed up. And she got between us. And she had red hair. And I like people with red hair. It looks like a rabbit foot. I think he's lucky. The person with red hair is like, good luck. So like, the fact she had red hair, I didn't grab the father. But, you know, she calmed everything down. And I went home. And, you know, I was still sponging with my parents. And I went to their house, and I woke up the next morning, and I was sick, and I was shaking. And I felt kind of weird about the fact that I almost grabbed that guy, because, you know, I know I drank a little too much, but I felt that basically I was a very wonderful person, and it didn't look good. You know, it looked almost like maybe there's something wrong with me. And it was Christmas Day, and my other siblings started showing up with their children, and one of my sisters, her husband came with three of their kids, and the other kid, who was 3 years old at the time, was in the hospital. His appendix had burst, and he had peritonitis around his intestines, and they thought that perhaps he would die that day. And I remember thinking, oh, shit. If he dies, I'm going to have to, 3 nights in a row, I'm going to have to go to a funeral, because we're Irish, have the nice funerals. I have to go to a funeral 3 nights, I have to show up like in reasonable shape. Like, how am I going to be, like, in reasonable shape at 7 o'clock at night, you know, for, a funeral? And this is horrible. You know, this was a real problem for me. And I realized that I didn't care. I mean, I had no feelings that, well, if he died, it was like nothing. It was just like, it was like stepping on an ant. It would be too bad for the ant. But, you know, fuck. What's this guy keep doing? As soon as he dropped my drinking, and it was, I knew there was a lot wrong with this. I knew there was something seriously wrong with me, that I had no feelings, that my nephew was 3 years old, and he might die, and I don't care. And I'm thinking, I'm even thinking, like, oh, God, I'll have to cry. You know, I'll have to show some kind of emotion. And I thought, I could fake that. I could do that. Because I used to feel sorry for myself, and I would start crying, and I'd drop a hat. I can still do it. If I feel sorry for myself for 5 minutes, I'll start bawling. You know, I can do that. That's not a problem. Crying is easy. But having feelings became impossible. And I thought, there's something wrong with me. I didn't know if it was, like, I was, you know, I knew I was an alcoholic. And I knew, and I didn't care. I knew I was an alcoholic. I said, like, is this caused by the alcohol? By the drinking? Or am I crazy? Or am I a bad person? And I didn't know, you know. So I went to AA to find out. And I found out it was like kind of all three. You know, I was very selfish, fearful, mean, self-pitying, mentally ill, drunkard, you know, and that's who I was when I came in today. I was sober a few months, and I had to sponsor. I picked this guy to be my sponsor because he's about 6'4", 300 pounds, and I figured, like, he could be like my father. If I was with him, I would feel protected, because I always was terrified. No matter how I was, when I was going to grab that guy, I was afraid. I was always afraid. I was afraid of everything. I had phobias. I had fears. I had, I couldn't function. Basically, drinking for me was the antidote to the fact that I always felt afraid. When I was drinking, I would start to feel less afraid. Except at the end of my drinking, sometimes I would drink, and the fear just wouldn't go away. It would just stay. Nothing worked. Nothing got better. I just stayed afraid. So I came in today, I got a giant guy to be my sponsor, because he would make me feel secure, because he was, big. He was big, and he talked loud, and I saw his mouth, and he said, I'm a card-carrying member of Alcoholics Anonymous 20 years! And I said, well, okay, sober a long time. So he knows. He's big, and he knows, He was in his 20 years, he had 1 5-year slip and 1 7-year slip, and he was sober 7 months, but he was a fantastic sponsor for me, because he did make me feel secure. Not because he was big, because he was gentle, he was understanding, he was very patient. I'd have anxiety attacks, I'd go see him, I'd call him up, he'd hold my hand, I'd jump up and down, I'd shake, he'd figure out why I was afraid, and I would agree with him, and I don't know if he was right or wrong, about what I was afraid of, just that he had some sort of serenity to offer me, and I accepted it, and he helped me get sober, and when I was sober about 5 or 6 months, he relapsed again. But by that time, I was really solid and going to meetings and wanting to stay sober. And I was a good deal less crazy, and I was a good deal more honest. Now, at first, my honesty was I would be lying, and I would feel bad about it. That was the start of being honest. I would feel bad about it. Before I would lie, it would always be please don't confront me on the fact that I'm lying. Please believe me. But now I was starting to feel bad. I can remember I'd be at meetings and I'd, sharing incidents about my life that I had lied about so often. I had memories of them happening, but they didn't happen. Karen identifies, that's nice. And one time I was at a meeting and I told this long story about this big incident, And it was on the next person, I was like, that never happened. I was so embarrassed myself, And I don't know if I got honest about that right away, but one night, these two guys and I were, after me, were standing around the parking lot, we were talking, and, Bush just, really starting to get thick. I mean, there was one guy who was just, telling stories, I know about him, but I don't think he was telling the truth either, but I know I wasn't, He might have had a couple of real stories, but I had nothing. Every time he would say something, I'd tell another story. Every time I say something, he'd tell another story. The third guy, he's just standing there, with his head down, he's getting a little depressed, And I remember going home thinking, maybe he feels bad, maybe he missed something, there's something wrong with him, maybe they'll make this guy drink because he's going to feel inferior to the great lines he had when we were drinking, So as it happened, me and that guy were going clamming, clams you eat, you go dig him out of the water. He had a boat, that was his occupation. I was working with him that day, and we were doing that, and I told him that everything I said the night before was a lie, and that's one of the toughest things I ever did, I mean, it was a big change. And he was really grateful that I told him that, because he said he felt horrible because he didn't have any good stories, Poor bastard, he was in the truth. He was stuck with nothing, And that was an important thing for me, So I think I did maybe my first 10 step a while before I did some other steps, And that guy and I, we stayed good friends for 20 years. The other guy too, it was nice. I got very active in AA. I just, I started, I went to meetings all the time, I was sober a month. I moved out of my parents' house, they were in an apartment. I mean, the hell, I only turned 30. It was it was time, I'd been out of the house a few years before, but I was back for a lot longer than my father wanted anyway. Because he's telling me on a daily basis to leave, and I just I don't want to leave. I don't give you any money. My mother does the laundry. She cooks. She's a good cook. I'm not ashamed of myself enough to do anything about this to change. I'm willing to live this low sponge-like existence and tell myself I feel good, but I never felt good when I was drinking. So I was at a meeting one day, and a guy was sharing. It was an older guy. He was sober about 6 years, a long time. And he said that every time you make coffee, you buy like 90 days sobriety or something. You know. So I started making coffee 4 times a week. I figured every week I was getting a year in the bank. You know, it's going to be safe, you know. And it's funny because I never had a slip since I came into AA, you know, Christmas Day. I was sober 29 years, so I don't know. He might have been right. Well, he might have been right for me because I believed it, you know. So I was very active in going to meetings, like, you know, setting up, making coffee, running my mouth, and had the opportunity to share. I'd just go on forever. Before, it's funny, when I was drinking, I didn't talk. When I was sobered up, I haven't shut up since. That's the way it goes sometimes, you know. I was in a bar one night, and the guy said to me, I thought it was a great compliment at the time. He said to me, Marty, you said, you're the perfect Irishman. He said, you wouldn't say shit if you had a mouthful. And I thought, no, I would not. I wouldn't say anything. I just would have a mouthful of shit and be happy and be quiet. Perfect, you know. So I stayed sober. I got a second sponsor. My second sponsor, he helped me a lot. He was a character. You know, it's a funny thing. You know, who your friends are in life, people help you and stuff. It's just who it is. You know, it's just how it works out. You can't just like look at some guy and says, well, he dresses like me. I like the way he sounds, and think that's going to work. It just works the way it works. You know, he looked like a parrot. He had a big handlebar mustache. He was short. He had huge hands, and he was like very patient and very understanding. And I call him at 2 o'clock in the morning to wake him up. Because I couldn't sleep. I talked to him for an hour about bullshit, you know, about nothing. And he just like, okay. And that's not the perfect sponsor, I understand that, but I needed that. I needed somebody to be willing to put up, because I know I just felt that wasn't worth it yet from other people. So I stayed sober, and, you know, in sobriety, I haven't been like a really good boy all the time. I've had a lot of problems with my anger, with violence, with controlling, with bad relationships. And, you know, like, so every minute am I sober and I'm sober. I'm sober because I don't drink and I don't use drugs. You know, okay? When I was sober 4 or 5 months, I got in an argument with this guy because he thought he was the Antichrist, but I thought, no, I'm the Antichrist, you know? I mean, I wasn't well. I'm much more well now than I was then, you know? I don't think I'm anybody today besides who I am, okay? I'm not on any mystical missions against God or anything like that, you know? Just a person living a life. And, so I had ups and downs, and I always been happy being sober. I've always been grateful being sober. Once I was sober a little while, I really noticed the difference in how I felt physically. I thought I never had hangovers when I was drinking. The reason I thought I never had hangovers is because I never felt physically well. I always was in pain. My head always hurt. My back hurt. My ass always hurt. Okay, I was always having problems with diarrhea, blood, all the time. It's horrible. I used to get up in the morning sometimes and stand up and pass out. But I thought I had no hangovers because I felt that way all the time. The only time I didn't feel that way when I was drinking myself into blackout for like about 15 minutes, I feel okay. You know, and it was like, boom, I don't feel okay again. So I've been married twice in sobriety, and I'm not married twice in sobriety, you know. And the first marriage, I like to think it was even, you know, we both were screwed up. And the second marriage, it was all on me, you know. I screwed it up completely. She was a very wonderful person. She loved me a lot. She was very patient for years. And, you know, the things that were going on inside of me at the time destroyed our relationship. But the funny thing is now, the nice thing about it is that after that relationship ended, we stayed in contact and we still stayed close. And I really was important to me to make amends to her for the way I treated her. And making amends to her was not going to be saying, like, I was a prig, I was selfish. No, that wasn't how I was going to make amends. I made amends to her by being a real friend. By, like, you know, when she went through a relationship and she broke up, let her cry. You know, and then I see like go back to the same guy who was like driving it crazy, let it go. And then when he drives it crazy, and just to be there, to be a friend, no matter what. You know, like my early sponsors were to be me. And now, today, She's the best friend I ever had. She was my best friend when I was married to her. But the difference today is I'm a much better friend to her than I was then. I was just like busy trying to deal with my shit and trying to keep the relationship going no matter that it was destroying her. You know, just like I was holding on. And one day I realized where I was at with that, and I let go of her and let her leave me. And it was painful. And if there's one regret I have in my life, is I screwed that up. But I've been honest with her and with myself ever since. And I'm doing a lot better. This past year was kind of a tough year for me. I had four siblings, my three sisters and my younger brother. My younger brother, he died January 28th last year. And I hadn't seen him in 9 or 10 years. And I hadn't spoken to him about 6 or 7 years on the phone. And I was very close with my brother growing up. He's 5 years younger than me. When we were growing up, I basically took care of him. I mean, like I bathed him, I dressed him, I put him to bed, I watched him all the time. When he got a little bit older, we were drunk together. When I guess he was about 14, I was 19. I had developed a skill where I would drink and I'd get drunk and I'd have to vomit. I could force it back down before it came out, you know. I thought this was good, you know, because I could puke. So one night, I told him I could do this. So we're drinking one night, I'm drinking. And I do it. He's like, wow, that's cool. You know? He told me, man, it's the only thing I ever did that impressed him, you know. He said, you turned blue, and he swallowed it. It was great, you know. But my brother, he was in AA when I came in. He was sober 3 years when I came in. He got sober when he was 22. And as far as I know, he was sober 31 years when he died. He was absent 31 years when he died. And it was very painful that, you know, I had no relationship with him. I think when I got sober for a few years, we were very tight, you know, and he was sober. We still had a meeting. Sometimes we had meetings together. He was kind of not far away, but far enough that it was inconvenient to do all the meetings with him. When I went to see him, we had something in common. We were tight. We were both sober and AA. And he drifted away from AA. He stopped going to meetings. And it just like it was hard to have a relationship with him. And with my sisters and my parents died. I don't know. It just all fell apart. And I made a decision to let go of them. And I did. And that was the right decision for me. And the reason I made the decision is because the relationship was that bad. It was that painful for me. But when Jimmy died last January, it was horrible for me. It was horrible because what came back was all the feelings. That you know, like being a kid and loving him so much. And him being so important to me. Like, he was like a person in my family. I was allowed to love him. I was like, somehow I wasn't allowed to love other people to be close, but I was like he was my brother. We were tight. Somewhere along the line, even in AA, after he became a teenager, things got estranged between us, and it was never the same. But like, what I had him mourn was, being a little kid who had all this love, and I was like normal at one time, and I just wasn't allowed to express it. You know, I wasn't allowed to do it. Like even as an adult, I loved my brother, but I wasn't. Like, it just wouldn't be friends with me. Just wouldn't allow it. You know, and it was really, it was very painful. And what happened was, I really didn't fight it. I let it pass through me. I talked about it. I cried about it. I talked about it. And I thought about it, and it was painful all the time. But I prayed, and I went to meetings, and I shared, you know. And I realized things, and it kind of passed, you know. He was only 52 years old. I mean, I'm sorry that he died so young. He had four children. But I got some peace inside of myself with my own life, you know. And I guess I was able to allow myself to love him again, you know. Like, let myself feel it. Not just like, you know, he's somebody who, you know, was there in the past. And so, after that, it's gone along. And this past, a few months back, I got involved with the woman. And it didn't work out, you know. I don't have too much success, you know, getting along with women. But I try. You know, I give it a shot now and then, you know, every once in a while. And I was very sad. It was very painful. And I let it go. And what happened was, like, great. It was like, this time I wasn't willing to hold on forever. Like, it was like this, like, we had this little bit of nice time in the beginning. And then it was just like, always trying to get back to that. It's like, no. This person is not there. We're not connected. It's nuts. I got to stay away from her, you know. And I have. And, but then, you know, sort of past month and a half, I'm sad. But in the past week or so, you know, I'm starting to feel better, get back to myself. I'm not saying getting into relationships is a bad thing. I don't think that at all. I just say, but like before I was in this relationship with her, I was walking around pretty much happy all the time. Once I was with her about a month, I was walking around pretty much miserable all the time, you know. So now I'm going back to being pretty much happy all the time, which is like, you know, it's, this is my opinion. You get happy, you get miserable. Always choose happy. You know, but it's like staying sober. You know, I know if I drink, it's going to be hell. You know, if I stay sober, sometimes it might be hell. Sometimes it'll be great. You know, and I was listening to the radio about a year and a half ago, and I don't know, it was kind of like, you know, I was in my artsy fartsy moments. I was like listening to CBC. I was like an intellectual, rather than watching TV and watching. I was in the radio. You know, I'm burning my brain. And they were talking about, somebody was talking about these two French Impressionist painters. And I don't remember the names of the painters, you know. And he said that one of them, you know, they were both pretty famous. But the older one, he was very famous, he was very wealthy, and his paintings were already in, you know, big museums all over the world. And he had extremely bad rheumatoid arthritis. And even holding the paintbrush, just holding it, was extremely painful. He would paint 10 or 12 hours a day. And his friend said to him, like, get all this money. You're successful. You're famous. Why go through all this pain of painting every day? And the guy said to him, the pain passes, but the beauty remains. And that's what happens, I think, in life is that, you know, I get myself in some bad situations, and they're painful, or I create a problem, but it passes. You know, it passes, you know. Get in a bad relationship, get some pain, get out of the relationship, pain passes. And what am I left with? I'm left with my wife. You know, the universe is beautiful. I mean, even like, you know, global heating and stuff. Like, if the world ends, if we all die, the universe is still going to be there. It's still going to be beautiful. It's going to replenish itself somehow, you know. And I think the big lesson I got in sobriety is that, like, when I'm in pain, it will pass. And what will be left is, I was a wretched piece of shit when I showed up in AA. And they accepted me, and they helped me get better, helped me get more well than I had been since I was a little boy. And I can still get more well than I am today, but I'm certainly much more well than I was a while ago. And not just 29 years ago, than I was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So, you know, so I'm in pain. You know, it'll pass. Even if the time comes when I'm going to die, even when I die, my death will pass. It'll be over. And, you know, the beauty that, you know, AA, for nothing, was there to take care of me and bring me back to life, that will remain, you know. And whatever little good I ever did in AA and helped anybody else in my life, that remains, you know. If I'm in pain, it doesn't mean I can't be kind to somebody else. When I was drinking, I didn't know that. I thought when I was in pain, the universe sucked, God is horrible, it's everybody's fault. Why won't somebody please just take care of me? You know, and I just felt like, you know, boom. And every time I got in a jackpot when I was drinking, as soon as I get out of it, I get drunk again to celebrate. I'm out of the jackpot. I get arrested. I spend the day in jail. I get out. I go borrow money so I can get drunk to celebrate getting out of jail. But I only went to jail because I was drunk. I only got arrested for public intoxication. You know? That was it. You know? So, I feel good today. I'm grateful I'm alive. I'm grateful I'm sober. I'm grateful I have hope. And I also have faith today. You know, when I came in today, I hoped that I would stop drinking. Today I have faith that I don't have to drink. That there is a way to stay sober, no matter what happens. You know, I have faith that if I do something right, a good thing, good will come out of it. I have faith if I do something stupid and mean, I'm going to get stupid, mean results. And I'm not going to feel good. Thank you.